Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the free enterprise system when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something's wrong with them, because they've been banned from our public schools, our public institutions, and our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple, time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto enterprise. And they're teaching these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, public institutions, and we've now made them a part of our national psyche. And this is a radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion? That's right, your daughter can have an abortion arranged to that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. Now, the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law, because our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties for the violation of these laws. Now, every law has a penalty. You don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer from its effect. Now, whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it's automatic and it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package? It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, last chapter here to the free enterprise system. We're talking about free enterprise versus socialism, communism, Nazism, fascism, capitalism, all these isms that you hear so much about. Central planning comes into play. Right now, as I speak, our president is in the process of planning our economy from the top down. Now, when they tried this in the Soviet Union for, you know, many years under Lenin and Stalin, they had these five-year plans, and the government would mandate how much tractor production was going to come out and how much of this, that, and another thing they were going to produce. Well, an interesting story came out of this central planning, because they created, they took all the farms away from the people, and they built these big state-run communal farms. They thought that a little farm with 40 acres is inefficient, and so what you need is a big state farm with 400,000 acres. Well, that's a fallacy. And when they actually put it into practice, the Russian people could not feed themselves. Now, prior to Lenin and Stalin, they had a feudal agriculture under the Tsar, and it wasn't anything to brag about, but they could feed themselves. The Russians were able to feed themselves. Under communism, they couldn't feed themselves. They'd have massive imports of grains. They'd have to make tractors and then sell the tractors and then buy grain and bring it in. And so one day they woke up and they said, well, here's what we're going to do. Let's give all the peasants on these 400, 500, 600,000 acre state farms, let's give them one half of an acre and let them produce for themselves on that half acre, and then they can sell it or use it or eat it or do whatever they want with it. So there was a little opening. Now notice this. The total agricultural operation of the Soviet Union was predicated upon these huge state farms, kind of like our big corporate agribusiness farms in the United States today. We're patterning our agricultural system after the Soviet Union and their failed system of the 20s, 30s, and 40s. But nevertheless, they let these peasants, all the workers on the farms, have a half an acre. And here's what happened. When they tallied up the total production from all of these big state farms, it represented exactly 50% of all of the agricultural produce produced in the Soviet Union. And the other 50% came off of these one-half-acre plots. Now, what does that tell you? I mean, here you've got millions and millions of acres under state central control, producing all this wheat, corn, beans, soybeans, and cotton, and so on. And then you give all the workers out there one-half-acre each, and they produce as much as all the state farms combined. So all of these acres out there didn't produce near as much as they thought it was. They thought it was going to be economical, but it wasn't. All right. Now, if you wanted to solve the agricultural problem in the Soviet Union, my conclusion would be just give the peasants a full acre, and that should raise production another 50%, you know, over what it was. Now, they never did do that, but I just thought I'd throw that one out there. So when all else fails, when the central planning fails, just butt out and let people have a half an acre and they'll take care of themselves. And I've been teaching people subsistence and survival now for many years, and I tell them the same thing. Son, if you've got 2,000 square feet in your backyard, I don't need a half an acre, just 2,000 square feet. And you can feed a family of six year-round. Now, that's a hell of a lot better than the Soviet Union did. Now, they sent a delegation over there one time, the Soviet Union, to take a look at their big state farms and see if there was anything worth emulating here in the United States. Evidently, they must have thought it was, because that's what we've done here in this country. So they got over there, and here was the report. The September 1st was mandated by Moscow. Now, remember, the Soviet Union has 9 time zones. I mean, this thing is so big, it stretches from Japan to Germany, if you can believe it. I mean, that's a big piece of real estate. Goes clear out here for, oh, hell, it stretches from Alaska to Germany. They used to have East Germany, you know, in their orbit. And so September 1st was the date that the harvest began. And I thought, who in the hell came up with the idea that wheat harvest begins on September the 1st? Are the wheat kernels in milk yet? Or are they hard yet? Are they overripe? Has the wheat fallen down? You know, there's, when you go to harvest wheat, you know, there's some considerations that you take a look at. You know, you walk out in your field and you take a look at some wheat and you say, no, this ain't quite ready yet. But it's September the 1st. I don't care. Maybe this wheat has to wait until September the 15th. Maybe October the 9th is when this wheat's going to be ready to harvest. It is true that September 1st is a good day, you know, plan on wheat harvest. But so they went out in the field. Now, in this one location, since it was September 1st and wheat harvest is mandated from Moscow, they all manned their combines and they went out. Now while they're doing this, there's this god-awful thunderstorm comes through. And this thunderstorm comes through, and the fields are just saturated, and they drive the combine out in the wheel, out in the field, and it just sinks right in, right up to the running boards. Now, nobody in his right mind, you know, would drive a combine out into a wet field, but these guys did, because that's what the rule book called for. Now, that's what's wrong with central planning. And right now, as I speak, the President of the United States is central planning the automobile industry. They've come up with a mass transit program. They're going to build railroads. I mean, the government is going to mandate that we're going to build railroads, high-speed railroads, and we're going to pay for that with tax dollars and borrowed money. Is that really the right way to allocate those resources? Is that really the way that people want to travel, high-speed rail? I mean, I live here in Isabella, Missouri. Are they going to build a high-speed rail from Theodosia to Gainesville? Is the train going to leave Theodosia 6 miles to the west, travel at 200 miles an hour, stop at the station here in Isabella, pick us up, and then resume at speed at 200 miles an hour, stop in Gainesville, so that I can do my business at the courthouse? Is that really the allocation of my tax dollars that I want to buy and pay for? Let me ask you this. Well, you people out there in Los Angeles, is that what you want to pay for? Do you want to buy a high-speed rail system from Theodosia to Gainesville for George Gordon? Because I want to tell you right up front, I don't want to spend my money building a high-speed rail system for you people in Los Angeles. Now, if you want to build it, get after it, but don't call on me. I want to take a princess cruise. I really don't want to build a railroad for you. Now, somebody comes along and says, well, it's for the good of the country. I don't care. Maybe it is. Who in the hell came up with the conclusion that this is for the good of the country? Is it the Pullman Company? Is it the Republican Central Committee? Is it the Democrats? Is it Halliburton? I'm sure that a lot of people are going to benefit from the building of these high-speed rail networks at taxpayer expense. I don't deny that. But is it going to benefit George Gordon? You know, I'm motivated by vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And if I don't see some benefit for me, I don't want to buy it. So I opted out. I resigned my Social Security number and just dropped out. I'm not opposed to you people building high rail systems and taking over General Motors and bailing out J.P. Morgan and Bank of America and paying trillions of dollars in TARP funds to guarantee AIG's insurance business. I'm all for you people. If that's where you want to spend your money, get out there and get with it. I don't want to spend my money that way, and I'm not going to. So I opted out. I'm going to sit on the sidelines and watch you socialists out there and see how this pans out, because it didn't work well for the Russians when they tried it. It didn't work for the Chinese when they tried it. It hasn't worked anywhere where it's been tried before, and I doubt if it's going to work for George Gordon. So I said, hell, count me out. Now let me show you what happens here. The government has been involved in the highway business for years, haven't they? And the highway system in America is government financed, government taxed, government takes care of the highway, don't they? Has anybody ever thought that maybe the highway system ought to be in private hands? Maybe General Motors could run the highway system better than the highway department of your state? You ever think about that? I know you haven't, because in all of our lifetimes, we've never known of the highway system being in private hands. But that doesn't mean that it's always been that way. You know, we used to have roads in this country that were in private control and private hands. And we didn't have nearly the problems we're having today. Now, today in Los Angeles, if you want to go from point A to point B, last time I heard that the average speed was 15 miles an hour. In New York City, in 1900, if you were traveling on the streets of New York, the average speed was 11 miles an hour, and today it's 9 miles an hour. I don't know that the city of New York has increased the efficiency of the streets and the Now, you might be sitting there saying, well, if the city doesn't do it and the state doesn't do it and the federal government doesn't do it, who else is going to? I didn't come here to tell you who's going to do it. I just came here to tell you that what you got doesn't work and that maybe we ought to be looking somewhere else. Now, listen to this, looking in the wrong place. Has it ever occurred to us that maybe we're looking in all of the wrong places for these solutions? Maybe it could be that there are solutions out there, but it's not where we're looking. No number or concentration of experts on road construction or of wizards on finance can find the solution to the highway problem until the search is conducted in the area in which the solution lies. The evidence is clear that the wrong place to look for the solution to the highway problem is in the area of government. That practically all highways are owned by some particular form of government, federal, state, county, or municipal. And that is the problem. And that is not the solution. Government is not creative. And although misguided and misunderstanding, citizens and elected servants have, time and time again, mistaken compulsion for being the answer to creation. The proper role of government should be to defend our nation from outside attack as a soldier, and to defend us from lawlessness from within as a policeman. That's government's role. Both of these tasks are very important to the free market economy. But neither is creative in nature. The company striving to develop a new vaccine for the elimination of cancer surely would not assign that project to the plant security police, would they? Nor should we assign the development of our highways to political policemen. We have too often hooked up coercive power of government to the creative field, and the results have ended inevitably in failure. When the hand of government is inserted into the problem requiring initiative, it becomes a dead hand, and the failure can be predicted. All right, so let's pause right here and let's ask ourselves the question, can you name one problem the government has ever involved itself in that it has solved? Name one. Do we need a drum roll here? Do we need a little trumpeteering? Huh? You know, government is a problem. Government has a role to play. We created government to protect us from the Tripoli pirates, to protect us from Saddam Hussein, to protect us from the terrorists, to protect us. And what in the hell is the government doing taking over General Motors? Handing out our tax dollars to bail out these failed companies, and especially these failed banks over here that caused the problem to start with. It was government along with, in a partnership with these banks over here, you know, the Federal Reserve Bank, paper money, that gave us the problem that we're all paying for now. So I don't want to tell you people to give up your paper money, give up your Ben Bernanke and your Federal Reserve Central Bank. I mean, that's far be it for me to tell you people how to live your lives. But I'm not going to participate in that crap. It doesn't make any money for little Georgie Gordon, so I decided to opt out of it. Now, I'm not complaining about the Federal Reserve. I'm not complaining about Barack Obama. I'm not complaining about the federal government bailing out Bank of America and putting all of these bills on your tax bill and indebting you people for the rest of your lives, to indenture you people to feudal serfdom and your children to feudal serfdom for the next God knows how many generations. Evidently, that's what Americans want, and that's what they're buying for. That's what they're voting for. I don't want it, and I'm not going to buy it. So I opted out. Now, it could be that you may be one of those contrarians that may want to opt out. If you take a look at the government's role in highways and then ask yourself, are we getting our money's worth? Are we getting the highways that we're paying for? You know, you answer the question. And if the answer is yes, stick with the program. If the answer is no, you may be a candidate for dropping out. Do you think bailing out these banks over here that caused the subprime mortgage problem to start with is the solution to the economic problem? Bailing them out? If you do, stick with the program. If you don't, maybe you're a contrarian. Maybe you'd rather build a swimming pool in your backyard and take a princess cruise. Now, I pointed out to you in this series of programs over here, the free marketplace works like a shot. The free marketplace works everywhere in the world. The free marketplace is at work today in North Korea. That's got to be the most totalitarian welfare police state on planet Earth. You can rest assured that there's a free market underground economy working right there in North Korea today. It doesn't work for most of the people. It doesn't work for the majority of people, but everybody that's participating in it is benefiting from it. Now, here in the United States, we're spending billions of taxpayer dollars to eradicate illegal drugs. We want to promote legal drugs and eradicate illegal drugs. Hell, the illegal drug guys have got it hands down over the legal drug guys every day of the week. And that's because they're selling their marijuana for 1/6 the price that Rexall is selling it for. The Rexall people don't have a market and a marketplace. And they have to use coercion. They got to use government power to sell their product. But hell, there's no shortage of marijuana out there on the streets of America. And at a competitive price. Now, if the government would get out of the marijuana business altogether, the price of marijuana would collapse. You don't need to spend billions of dollars on a war against marijuana. It ain't necessary. The marketplace takes care of that. Will you eradicate marijuana? No. Have you eradicated marijuana with your drug war? No. So the bottom line is, you're never going to eradicate marijuana. So put that out of your mind. So what's the best way to control it? And I'm sitting here telling you, the free marketplace is the best way to control marijuana. And up until the government outlawed it in 1937, you never had a marijuana problem. Today you got a marijuana problem, which costs you god-awful much money. I don't know how much, but it's billions and billions and billions, as old Carl Sagan used to say. Billions and billions. And evidently, that's what the people of America want. That's what they're buying. That's what they're paying for. Now, which brings us up here to the planning, planning versus the free market. So when we discuss economic planning, we must be clear concerning what it is that we're talking about. The real question being raised is not plan or not plan, but whose plan? Each of us, in our private capacity, is constantly planning for the future. What we will do for the rest of today, what we're going to do for the rest of the week, what do we plan to do for the weekend? What will we do this month or next year? Some of us are planning, though in more general ways, 10 or 20 years ahead. You know, a lot of you people with 401ks, weren't you planning ahead for your retirement? Dreaming about that Winnebago? So we're making these plans both in our capacity as consumers and as producers. Employees are either planning to stay where they are or to shift from one job to another, or from one company to another, or from one city to another, or even from one career to another. Entrepreneurs are either planning to stay in one location or to move to another, to expand or contract their operations, to stop making a product for which they think demand is dying, and to start making one for which they think demand is going to grow. Now, the people who call themselves economic planners either ignore or by implication deny all of this. They talk as if the world of private enterprise, the free market, supply and demand, and competition were a world of chaos and anarchy in which nobody ever planned ahead or looked ahead, but merely drifted or staggered along by accident. I once engaged in a television debate with an eminent planner in a high official position who implied that without his forecasts and guidance, American business would be flying blind. Well, at best, the planners imply, the world of private enterprise is one in which everybody works or plans at cross purposes or makes his plans solely in his private interest rather than in the public interest. So the planner wants to substitute his plan for the plans of everybody else. So at best, he wants the government to lay down a master plan to which everybody else's plan must be subordinated. And that's what planning is all about. That's why we have zoning and planning. You see, your government is sitting here saying, you people out there aren't smart enough to build your house. We have to do that for you. Which leads me to the conclusion, excuse me, but who built the Cathedral of Notre Dame over in Paris? Or who built the White House without zoning and planning? You know, come on. Who built all of the buildings of America prior to 1923 when we adopted zoning and planning in this country? Now, you know, it could well be. I'm not sitting here saying that you people in New York ought not to issue, you know, zoning and planning. You know, when you want to build a skyscraper like the Twin Towers or like the Empire State Building, maybe that's germane. But is it really in the best interests of the free marketplace? Is it really in the best interests of the majority of people to have central planners out here planning for us? We've got it. I'm not denying it. You got the president over here planning how he's going to run General Motors for the next 10 years. Is that really in the best interest of Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife? You know, they did that in Russia. It didn't work there. They called it the Soviet Union those days. They tried it in China. It didn't work there. Here in America, where we tried free enterprise, it worked like a shot. Built the wealthiest, most powerful, productive, prosperous nation in the world in 113 years. Never before in the history of mankind has anything ever been built of that size and magnitude in that short period of time. Benefited the most people. Were there still poor people in Mississippi? Yep. Jesus said, the poor you have with you always. Did you fools out there believe that you could eliminate poverty? God Almighty himself said, you can't eliminate poverty. So you voted in Lyndon Johnson. He said that's what he was going to do. Well, how'd he fare out? He spent your money in his quest to eliminate poverty with the Great Society. Well, what were the results? Bobby Kennedy come jumping into the game in 1968. He said, Ellie, I got a plan here. Let me be the central planner. I'll eliminate poverty. I mean, we got guys out here running for political office that are smarter than God. They don't even hide it. They tell you plainly, I'm smarter than God. That's what Johnson said. He said, we're going to eliminate poverty in our generation here in America. Jesus said, the poor you have with you always. Lyndon Johnson was obviously smarter than Jesus. Of course, that isn't hard to do. Hell, most of us believe we're smarter than Jesus. But I just thought I'd throw this out there for your consideration. Are you really sure that you're as smart as you think you are? Are you really sure that these central planners out here in Washington, D.C., or in Jefferson City, or Sacramento, California, are better able to make these decisions for you than you are? And I wouldn't doubt that in many cases, probably most of you people out there probably do need a guardian, somebody to make these decisions for you. But in times past, when we did practice the free enterprise system on a national scale, we're not doing that now. We still practice it here on a private and individual scale in America. It's practiced on a private and individual scale in North Korea. And the people that practice private enterprise on a private and individual scale in North Korea are living better than the people that are practicing the central planning collectivist program of the Communist Party. How do I know that? Because historically, that's always been the case everywhere it's ever been tried. You know, go pick up your history book and start paying attention here to the free enterprise system, and I think that's what you're going to see. Now, free enterprise has been tried in limited editions in all of the major empires. And in fact, when communism failed so abysmally in China, they went to the free enterprise system, and China has been an economic miracle over the last 40, I'd say since 1973. That's when President Nixon went over there, wasn't it, 72, 73? Went over there and opened trade doors, you know, with China. Let's see, 73 to 83, 93, 103. Hell, he only been at it for 35 years. And I would submit to you that there has never been so many people at one time in so short a period of time benefited by the free market system than have the Chinese. So the Indians are jumping on the bandwagon. They want to test this also. So India is lightening up on people and letting these people go out and, you know, have their half acre and see what they can produce on. And let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not state schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. And once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. So keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about planning versus the free market, central planning. It's the in thing. We've got central planning, we've got zoning and planning. Governments want to zone and plan and central plan and fine-tune their economies, and they've been doing that for years and years. And when they do that, they do it for the benefit of General Motors and Chase Manhattan Bank and Bank of America. They're not doing that on behalf of Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife, who actually pay the bills. Now, Henry Paulson, you know, came up with this TARP program. He said Americans need to put up $700 billion of their money to bail out these banks to preserve the economic system. Excuse me, but isn't it this economic system, this socialist economic system, that got us into this problem to start with? Now, here's where the rub comes in. See, the socialists now, they point their finger and say, you see how this capitalist free enterprise system has failed us, and here's why we need central planning. Hey, boys and girls, let's wake up and smell the coffee. It wasn't the free enterprise system that failed us. It was our 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, central planning, banker-oriented, Federal Reserve, fifth plank, central bank, second plank, income tax, 10th plank, public school system that failed us. That's where the failure lies. So now these central planners in Washington, D.C., led by President Obama and the Democratic Congress, well, let me back up. I'm sorry I said that. That just offends all you Democrats out there. Led by our Republican Congress are now going to give us more central planning. Well, okay, I don't want to get in the way of your central planning. But boys and girls, it was your central planning that brought this debacle upon the world to start with. It wasn't the free enterprise system. It wasn't the little Georgie Gordons with their 30 employees at Atlantis Manufacturing Company at 412 South 9th Street in Boise, Idaho that caused you your problem. You see, when little Georgie was up there, I was employing 30 people. We were producing products. And then a central planner came out. I'll tell you about the central planner. It came out from the Department of Labor in Washington, D.C. And he came out to my plant in Boise, Idaho, and interjected himself into my business. And when he left, I said, I'm not going to do this anymore. I've had it. So I closed that company out, and those 30 people, and I presume they're all still alive and well and doing something. I don't know what they're doing, but they ain't working for Atlantis. And Georgie Gordon, the creative force behind this company over here, now has a creative force. See, I still have my same creativity. That never left me. But instead of me using my creativity to employ 30 people, I now use my creativity to benefit just me, my wife, and my son. That's all, three of us. Which is what I was doing when I was operating the Atlantis Company. I was just doing that for me, my wife, and my children, but I was doing it for 30 other families as well. Now I just zero my creativity in on just my own family. And those 30 have to do the same thing. Now here's the problem in the real world. 95% of people are introverts, and 5% of people are extroverts. And the extroverts are the creators and the planners. And the other 95% of you people out there, you need people like little Georgie Gordon and Barack Obama and Henry Paulson. See, Barack Obama is very creative. If we could channel that man's creativity to free enterprise, oh my God, would he be a blessing to the people of America. But unfortunately, his creativity is channeled to the forces of the Ten Planks, to the Communist Manifesto and central planning, which is going to benefit Halliburton, Kellogg, Brown & Root, Bank of America, Citigroup. I don't deny it. Hell, those guys are going to make it. But Henry Paulson already has $600 million. And I fail to see how giving Henry Paulson another $600 million is going to benefit Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife, who's trying to make the mortgage payment in Detroit, Michigan. That's what I'm having a problem with. Now, I don't begrudge Henry having $600 million. And I don't want to take Henry's $600 million away from him at gunpoint and then redistribute it to the soup kitchens on the Bowery. I don't think that's the answer to the riddle. Here's where the answer to the riddle is. Get Henry Paulson and Ben Bernanke out of the free enterprise system. Get them the hell out of our way and just leave us alone. That's all. If you could just get those fools the hell out of your road, get them off of your half acre so you can go to work. And you'll produce as much on your half acre along with all the rest of the guys as the whole Soviet Union combined with all their tractors, all their combines, all their money, all their land and power, police power, couldn't produce one grain of wheat more than the workers out there working with hoes and their bare hands. So I say, get the hell out of the workers' way and let the workers with their hoes and rakes and their shovels and their bare hands go to work. We'll all live better. Hell, even Henry Paulson will live better. Now, Henry and Ben and Barack, these guys are motivated by vanity. They want rulership. They want power. They like political power. They like economic power. They like watching us grovel before their feet. And that's their thing in life. Nancy Pelosi loves power. That's why she's the Speaker of the House. If Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid had any concern for Joe Sixpack out there, then they would get the hell out of Joe Sixpack's way and let us go to work. They would quit hampering us. They would quit burdening us with these god-awful excessive taxations and these mind-boggling debts. Boys and girls, we were in debt beyond our means before Barack Obama took office. And boys and girls, the last 6 months, the last 3 months of George Bush and the first 3 months of Barack Obama have buried the American people in debt to a degree that you will never see daylight again. The only thing that's going to save your ass now is the second coming. Only God himself is going to save you now. I mean, that's where reality's at. Now, next week, I'm going to give you a report here on the privateer. I'm going to show you where the real numbers are as we're dealing here with the economy. And so I wanted to start off by telling you, here's where the answer lies. The free market system and the central planning concept that comes from communism is the exact antithesis. I mean, it's the exact opposite from what Joe Sixpack needs. Central planning is what Halliburton needs. Bank of America, the Federal Reserve Bank. My God, they want, they need, they desire, they live on, they prosper from central planning. I don't deny it. But what in the hell does that do for you out here in Detroit trying to make your mortgage payment now that you've been laid off from General Motors? Now, God had a pretty neat plan. God's plan for the economy is centered on agriculture. So when Moses came into the Promised Land, Moses didn't make it in, but he got the instructions and passed them on to Joshua. So when General Joshua got into the Promised Land, he had his marching orders, and it was to drive all of these natives out. And you do it one of two ways. You can kill them, or they can leave. But whenever you do, seize title to the land, and then distribute the land. And Moses wrote up the statute. Before he died, he wrote up the statute. And you divide the land up in this wise. You give the more land to the people that have more children, more need, and less land to those that have less need. So if you've got 12 kids, you probably need 40 acres. If you've only got 3 kids, you probably only need 20. No, you divide, you take what you need, and then leave the rest of it there for somebody else. And it's done by what we call use, occupation, and possession. And then we have what we call title to the land by landmarks. And then we use these three requisites here, land, labor, and substance. If we give you the land and you apply your labor, you will develop the substance. And agriculture is the most profitable business ever created by the mind of God. And we didn't have anything to do with this. God himself, it's got an 87,200% return on it. The profit margin on agriculture is 87,200%. Only a farmer could take that kind of an enterprise and screw it up by going to the bank and borrowing money, placing his property in subjection to the banks, and then losing it. Only a farmer could screw up a profit deal like that. So God said, now look, I've got 15 agricultural laws, and I want you to follow these agricultural laws. And we said, to hell with you, we've got an economy. And that's what we're going to work on. We're going to work on an economy. God said, well, you got your head up the wrong end again here, kid. But if that's what you want to do, get after it. So we did, and we got after it. And so now here's the results. And then next week I'm going to report on those results. I'm going to give you the brutal numbers. There ain't no salvation coming out of Washington by central planning, or London, or Paris, or Moscow, or Beijing. It ain't going to happen. The world is going into World War III. We're going into national captivity. We're going into poverty and famine, disease, war, death, and destruction. That's where we're headed. And we're headed there because we've rejected this free enterprise system, the Ten Commandment model. So now, if you're one of these contrarians out here, you might be asking yourself, oh, my God, if that's true, then is there any way for me to save my own ass out of this? And the answer is yeah. Yeah, there is. You get off this Ten Commandment. I mean, you get off this Ten Plank crap and get back to the Ten Commandment program. That's what the solution is. And you can do that as an individual. We don't need central planning. Us guys out here that can work, you know, that can produce. Now, I'm old, but I can still feed myself. I can still work enough, you know, to feed myself and probably 20 other people. I mean, you got to be in a wheelchair. Hell, even you people in wheelchairs can feed yourselves if you have the knowledge. I mean, you know, you might have to get out on the ground, you know, out of your wheelchair, pull some weeds or something, I don't know. Agriculture has the biggest return for the littlest or the smallest input, and it has the most security attached to it. I mean, this is where food, clothing, and shelter come from. You just take all you people out there listening to me right now. You're unemployed, right? And listen, wouldn't you like to have 5 acres of ground bought and paid for that you own free and clear with a house on it that's free and clear, and now you're unemployed? Wouldn't you be in a better position than you are in your apartment with the rent coming due, trying to make ends meet with your unemployment check, trying to buy groceries down at the grocery store with higher and higher prices and a fixed income? Wouldn't you be better off if you had 5 or 10 acres? That was God's plan from the beginning. He said, every man on planet Earth ought to have his own vine and fig tree. Every man on Earth ought to have a piece of ground. Now, 97% of Americans are locked up on 3% of the landmass. Did you know that? 97% of Americans are locked up in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, dependent upon your unemployment check and paying the rent and buying the groceries out of the grocery store. Well, okay, that's the 10-plank model, and you bought into it, and there you are. And you think maybe you might be better off or better served, you know, just you and your wife and 5 kids, if you had a house somewhere out here in the countryside where you had enough ground to grow your own garden, produce your own food, rents paid for because you own the house. And wouldn't you be better off with no property tax on there? You know, God never provided for property tax on your land. Did you know that? That was your idea. You guys came up with that. Or better yet, I think it was probably Henry Paulson, Ben Bernanke, and the central planners that came up with the idea of property tax on your property, on your land, on your house. How in the hell does that benefit you? Now think about this for a minute, huh? Come on. You got a house over here, and you're paying, I was talking to an airline pilot not long ago, he's paying $12,000 a year for a 3-bedroom house. The only saving grace was he had a swimming pool in the backyard. That's $1,000 a month property tax on a house down in South Florida. It was Fort Lauderdale. I looked at that, and I thought, if that house was situated anywhere in Ozark County, it wouldn't sell for $50,000. Well, with a swimming pool, maybe. A 3-bedroom house in Ozark County, Missouri, $50,000. Well, that's got to be some house. Wouldn't he be better off if he were out in the countryside someplace, tax-free, owns the house, sitting on 5 acres, and then, go ahead, fly airplanes. But, you know, what happens, you airline pilots out there? When you come into class here, you're telling me, oh, my God, they cut me back. Most of you airline pilots today are working for half what you were 20 years ago. Half, for crying out loud. That's the ones of you that survived. And the rest of you, what in the hell are you doing? $10,000-$12,000 a year on a damn house in Fort Lauderdale with a swimming pool in the backyard, and you haven't got enough ground out there to grow to grow a row of carrots, for crying out loud. The plan that God put out here was every man has a little piece of ground someplace so that he's self-sufficient, independent of government, independent of George Gordon and everybody else around him. That you can give the finger to everybody, tell everybody to kiss off, and you can take care of yourself. Now, that's where you ought to be, no matter where you are. I don't care if you're in North Korea or you're in Japan or you're sitting in Bolivia. For crying out loud, you should be independent and self-sufficient. Then, what do we want to do? Well, now, if you want to fly airplanes, make a little change on the side, that'd be a good idea. You want to work at General Motors and make $50 an hour, that'd be a pretty good plan, too. But when General Motors lays you off, and when your government no longer has the money to give you the Social Security benefits that they've been taking from all the rest of us and paying off to you, then you've still got something to fall back on that makes you totally independent and self-sufficient. That was the plan. Now, the central planners have an exact opposite plan. That is dependence. Central planning plans for dependence. You can't live without me. You have to have me, the tick in the dog's ear, to live. Now, once we bought into that, and we now believe that we have to have banks, we have to have insurance, we have to have central planners to tell us when to get up in the morning, when to go to bed at night, and what to do in between. And so now we have a whole nation of people that are incompetent and unable to manage their own affairs. So it shouldn't be any wonder that we have a whole nation of people that are unable to make free enterprise work because they don't know how. All right, now let me butt in here and tell you, there's a way to do that, and the way we do that is with private business. Private business is the manifestation. It is the operation of the free enterprise system. It's supply and demand. I'm operating in a private business. I got a little private law school. Three people, my wife, myself, and my son. Unlicensed. We're not bonded, insured. We deal in gold coin. We follow the Ten Commandment plan. We're sitting on a piece of land. We can grow our own food. We're independent from government. We don't draw Social Security. We're not on welfare and food stamps. That's the plan. That was God's plan. Of course, we woke up one day and the Ben Bernankes and the Henry Paulsons and the Barack Obamas and George Bushes said, what Americans want is jobs, jobs, jobs. Leave the farm, leave the land, and come work for the Ford Motor Company in Dearborn, Michigan for $5 a day. Now, we listened to that crap and we bought into it. All right, now you left the farm in Iowa and you went to Dearborn, you worked for Ford. Now, what have you got? You see, that safety net that George Bush used to talk about so often is broken. The real safety net for all of us was in our own hands. Our safety net was in our ability to produce our own food, fiber, and to live on our own land. That's where the safety net really was. It wasn't with the bureaucracy in Baltimore, Maryland, sending you out a Social Security check every month. Because that Social Security thing, that Ponzi scheme is upside down, children, like it or lump it. That Medicare program is upside down. Now, they told you could eat fat, blood, and pig, and you did, and you impaired your health. Now you need that insurance for that bypass surgery. I think you'd have been better off if you'd have followed Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14. I think you'd have been better off if you told that preacher over there to stick it up his hind end where there's no daylight. Now, that religion hasn't solved our problems. Our government's central planning hasn't solved our problems. The people who were best able to solve their own problems were the people themselves, the Joe Sixpacks and the Sally Housewives, as was demonstrated in the Soviet Union when the Soviets gave them a half an acre, for crying out loud, just a half an acre. And those workers out there produced half of all of the foodstuffs produced in the entire nation. Boys and girls, Americans can do that too. Hey, you people in Brazil and Bolivia, Korea, Japan, you can do the same thing. But you can't do it locked up in Tokyo. You ain't going to do that locked up in Sao Paulo. You got to have to get out on some ground someplace. Or you're going to have to take the mark of the beast, you know, whichever comes first. Now, compulsion is central planning. It is the aspect of planning to which our attention should be directed. Planning always involves compulsion, and this may be disguised in various ways. The government planners will, of course, try to persuade people that the master plan has been drawn up for their own good, and that the only persons who are going to be coerced are those whose plans are not in the public interest. The planners will say, in the newly fashionable phraseology, that their plans are not imperative, but merely indicative. They will make a great parade of democracy, freedom, cooperation, non-compulsion, by consulting all groups, labor, industry, the government, even consumers, representatives, in drawing up the master plan and the specific goals or targets. And of course, if they could really succeed in giving everybody his proportionate weight and voice and freedom of choice, if everybody were allowed to pursue the plan of production or consumption of specific goods and services that he had intended to pursue or would have pursued anyway, then the whole plan would be useless and pointless, a complete waste of energy and time. The plan would be meaningful only if it forced the production and consumption of different things or different quantities of things than a free market would have provided. In short, it would be meaningful only insofar as it put compulsion on somebody and forced some change in the pattern of production and consumption. And there are two excuses for this coercion. One is that the free market produces the wrong goods, and that only government planning and direction could assure the production of the right ones. This is the thesis popularized by J.K. Galbraith, another excuse, and the other excuse is that the free market does not produce enough goods, and that only government planning can speed things up. This is the thesis of the apostles of economic growth. This is the thesis of the central planners. Now, the truth of the matter is, and the experience that we all have had, is that individuals working down here at the bottom of the barrel, we're the guys that decide what it is we want to buy. Now, our government tells us that what we want are fuel-efficient cars. Excuse me. That's not what the marketplace said. And General Motors built the cars that the people wanted, the big gas guzzlers. Why did the people want big gas guzzlers? Because our government policy, the planners, bought all of our oil from overseas rather than develop the oil within our own borders. Because of that government planning, bringing oil in from Saudi Arabia, which was wonderful for the big corporations like ExxonMobil, I don't deny it, Phillips Petroleum and Conoco and the Arab oil sheiks and the politicians in Washington, my God, they've made nothing but money off of oil imports for the last 40 years. What in the hell has that done for Joe Sixpack? It sent us the wrong signal. And so we went out and bought the gas guzzlers because we had the cheap gas. But now we haven't developed our own gas and our own oil in our own country, which, by the way, we have more than the Saudi Arabians. How do you like that? Well, anyway, that's what central planning has brought us. It's a misallocation of goods and services. It provides goods and services to the elite at the expense of Joe Sixpack and Sally Hawthorne. Now, if you'd like to learn more about that free enterprise system, remember, it's Foundations of Liberty. Let me give you the telephone number one last time. It's 309-796-1485. 309-796-1485. And with that, we're out of time. We've got to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Remember, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.